This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Without the government, the Sudan Armed Forces, and without the RSF being at the table, I think the prospects for this peace initiative to be successful are really bleak.
That's David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, on whether a civilian conference will have much impact on the prospects for peace in Sudan. Details coming up. Also, analysts say Italy's plan to convince migrants not to cross the Mediterranean could serve as a model. And Britain has resolved the Rwanda asylum cases after the government dropped its policy. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Italy's government is trying a new development-focused approach to prevent migrants from attempting to cross the Mediterranean from Africa. Analysts say the plan, if it works, could serve as a model for all of Europe. For VOA, Henry Wilkins reports from the Italian island of Lampedusa, where residents are welcoming the measure after thousands of migrants arrived there in a single week last year.
Italian fisherman Partenico Vincenzo was at sea one morning in 2022 when he spotted a boat of 24 migrants trying to cross to Europe from Africa. He sailed to it, and before he knew it, the migrants were jumping onto his boat. There was nothing else to do but help them, he says. He says he was thinking about the migrants' families and thought about the fact that we are on this earth only once, he says, so have to help each other. He says he did everything he could. Vincenzo is not the only Lampedusa fisherman who has become an accidental rescuer of migrants in this sea. Fishermen here, along with Italian authorities, pick up migrants almost every day. About 95,000 migrants arrived on Lampedusa over 12 months, starting June 1st, 2023. Since January, the Italian government has put in place a new policy known as the Mattei Plan to try and stem the flow. Italy hopes the plan will redefine its relationship with Africa, stimulating development and creating jobs, and deterring migrants from leaving their countries of origin. Maddalena Procopio is with the European Council on Foreign Relations.
Is exactly this, using public funds to improve the investment climate. Africa needs investments.
Addressing irregular migration is a main concern for Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, who needs to appease the far-right voters who got her into office 2 years ago. If it works, and let's say the development-led approach, could become a model for the rest of Europe.
No individual European country is able to compete with other international players, China, Gulf countries.
Back in Lampedusa, which is closer to Tunisia and Libya than mainland Italy, activists say something must change. Matilda Edzacco is from Maldusa, a pro-migrant group.
Because shouldn't happen that in these years people arriving through the Mediterranean Sea that is so dangerous and so risky, and there are many, many people that are losing their lives or they are losing relatives or friends.
Itzacco disagrees with the current policies of Italy and other nations of Europe funding security forces in African states that routinely push back migrants. Vincenzo says he would like to see more cooperation to end the dangerous sea crossings and relieve pressure on Lampedusa's residents.
Ma per me è una cosa normalissima.
He says it should be normal not to see so many deaths at sea, and he's convinced that if the international community can reach an agreement, many deaths could be prevented. Officials say more than 3,000 people died trying to cross the Mediterranean last year. Migrant activists believe many others have gone unreported. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Lampedusa, Italy.
In related news, German charity CI says it has come to the rescue of migrant boats 5 times in 24 hours, evidence of the state of emergency in the Mediterranean. CI says it was alerted by a migrant hotline, but it did not say whether it had permission from Italian authorities to carry out the rescues, without which it risks having its ships seized. The French news agency AFP reports the group and two other rescue charity ships responded to the distress calls between Sunday and Monday, rescuing some 230 people, including a mother and her baby. After transferring some to an Italian Coast Guard vessel on Tuesday, it was transporting around 170 people to the assigned port in Genoa in northern Italy, which it said was a six-day round trip. Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni's government has sought to stem the arrival of migrant boats into Italy from North Africa. President Joe Biden welcomes members of the newly enlarged NATO alliance this week for a summit aimed at planning for Ukraine's future defense, and some observers say preparing the alliance for if Biden loses the November election amid growing doubts over his political future. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from the White House.
The big question the Transatlantic Alliance faces at this summit is, how much longer can Ukraine hold on? And for Americans, and a growing list of quietly worried allies, the same can be asked of the man who casts himself as Ukraine's biggest champion, President Joe Biden. On Monday, the 81-year-old Biden said he's staying in the presidential race amid a growing list of calls for him to step aside after his shaky debate performance last month. The White House on Monday refuted questions that NATO allies are concerned that these cracks at the leadership level could put the 75-year-old alliance on shaky ground as it meets in Washington this week. John Kirby is White House National Security Communications Advisor.
We're not picking up any signs of that from our allies at all. Quite the contrary. The conversations that we're having with them in advance, they're excited about this summit. They're excited about the possibilities and the things that we're going to be doing together specifically to help Ukraine.
Analysts say that while NATO leaders are indeed worried, they are being careful to not be seen as meddling in U.S. politics. Richard Stoll is a political scientist at Rice University. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
I think there is a concern in NATO. The leaders of the NATO countries may not love Joe Biden, but if we look back to the Trump administration, he said a number of things that were really anti-NATO. And I think, with all honesty, that most NATO countries would prefer Biden, again, not necessarily because they're so pro-Biden, but because of the things that Trump has said and threatened to do about NATO. Again, but they don't want to necessarily say a lot about this publicly because it looks like they're interfering in American elections, which is not something they're supposed to do.
And there are other cracks among leaders in the alliance. Hungary's far-right leader recently visited Russian President Vladimir Putin and cast himself as a bridge between the two adversaries. At this summit, 32-member group plans to take over Washington's role coordinating Ukraine's defense. Viktor Orbán is Hungary's prime minister.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the last 2.5 years,
there are fewer and fewer, and now remain hardly any who are able to speak with both foreign parties. Hungary is one of their few.
One thing unlikely to happen during the summit, a breakthrough in the conflict. Putin says Ukraine is not ready to discuss terms, which he says includes the retreat of Ukrainian troops from the four regions Russia says it is annexed. Ukraine seeks a just peace that includes all of its territory, and Ukraine's leader will attend this week's summit to press his case for that and for NATO membership in the future. The alliance meets Tuesday in Washington. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. A two-day conference in Cairo brought together Sudanese political parties and civilian groups who reached a consensus on forming a committee on fostering a lasting peace. A statement released Sunday stressed that the conferees agreed to preserve Sudan as a unified homeland on the foundations of citizenship, equal rights, and a civil, democratic, and federal state. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, discussed the outcome of the conference with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
It's a positive step on the diplomatic front, but without the government, the Sudan Armed Forces, and without the RSF being at the table, I think the prospects for this peace initiative to be successful are really bleak, because you need to have the two protagonists that are central to this conflict at the table. I think the second question is, there's a tension between this civilian-led process and the military generals, because at the heart of the Sudan conflict is the RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces do not want to be subordinate to any form of civilian control or civilian oversight. So I think that even further complicates this diplomatic effort. And it will be interesting to see how Egypt, as the big brother in the region, is able to articulate its diplomatic networks, so the other major powers that are also involved in the region can also bring these two generals to the table. Because I'm still very skeptical about how a civilian-led process is going to resolve this conflict when the two generals are not at the table.
Sudanese political and civil forces who met in Cairo stressed the need to stop the war immediately and work to provide urgent humanitarian needs for the Sudanese people. They also called for the necessity of adhering to the Jeddah Declaration and developing mechanisms for implementation. Would that move the needle after failed Saudi and U.S. mediation?
Again, when you do not have the two major belligerents, the RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces at the table, it ends up just being meaningless words in terms of the Jeddah Declaration. We have to remember that both of these two military factions have used ceasefire agreements, have used efforts to distribute humanitarian aid as pauses in the fighting so that they can rearm their military forces. And then they can also benefit from that same humanitarian aid to actually entrench their two positions. So it's really a fairly difficult situation, because as much as these civilian groups are calling for ceasefire and calling for the armed factions to lay down their weapons, the reality on the ground is very different, whereby General al-Burhan feels there is a military avenue to victory in terms of this war, and General Dagalo Hemedit also feels that there is a military solution. And the other issue here is that both sides are very well armed and very well financed. So the government side has its support from Saudi Arabia and from Egypt, but the RSF also has support from Russia and from the United Arab Emirates, in addition to tacit backing from countries like Chad. So until there's the two generals are actually at the table, until you have these major regional powers that are involved, and then you also have the civilian component, it's going to be very difficult to see anything different than a prolonged continuation of this armed struggle.
Some government officials and leaders of rebel factions refused to sign the conference statement. What do you make of that?
That's a red flag. That tells you that this diplomatic initiative will be dead on arrival. Let's not forget that 70% of the internally displaced people are actually from Darfur. So this further complicates the issue, because General Hemedit, leader of the RSF, is actually from Darfur. As the Sudan Armed Forces continues to face pressure from the rebels in Darfur, there is a high likelihood that Darfur could actually break away from Sudan proper, and that will encourage other regions to also try and break away from Sudan. Right now, it seems that this war and the humanitarian crisis will actually get worse, unfortunately, before it becomes better.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. A Reuters report indicates that kidnappings for ransom are increasing in Ethiopia's restive regions, while a peace agreement signed in November 2022 has resulted in a measure of stability for Tigray. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government has struggled to bring security to other areas. According to Reuters News, U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia Irvin Masinga wrote on social media platform X yesterday, pointing out that more than 1,300 people were killed across the country, with most of the violence affecting two regions. Recent and frequent kidnappings in Oromoya and Amhara regions show how prolonged conflict emboldens criminals and weakens the rule of law, the ambassador wrote. He added that more than 100 students and passengers were abducted last week for ransom. A United Nations report also says three buses were stopped last Wednesday by unknown gunmen around 120 kilometers north of the capital Addis Ababa in the Oromoya region. The attackers spoke Oromo and are believed to be from the Oromo Liberation Army rebel group, which the UN says is accused of killings, destruction of property, rape, and abductions. ECOWAS is planning to mark its 50th anniversary next year, but three member states have left the group and formed a new alliance. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
Even as the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, prepares to mark its 50th year, its members are dealing with the withdrawal of three states, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, all led by military hunters, are not likely to be part of the celebration. They have left ECOWAS and have formed a new group, the Alliance of Sahel States. The three have been expelling French and US forces and growing closer to Russia. The leaders of the new group met in Niger's capital, Niamey, on Saturday to adopt a treaty setting up the confederation. The plans include the creation of an investment bank and stabilization fund to begin developing a single currency. The three countries all are experiencing extremist violence. ECOWAS leaders have called the pullout decision unacceptable. Christopher Isike is a professor of African politics and international relations at the University of Pretoria in South Africa. He's on fellowship in the United States to study at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. He says ECOWAS is not likely to accept the new alliance, but also says the group might make sense in building unity in the small region. He spoke to VOA via WhatsApp.
Whether this particular case of this Confederation of Sahelian States can be a pathway for this to happen, that it needs to then happen at smaller regional levels before going to the sub-regional and then to the continental, I'm not sure of, especially considering the conditions under which this current confederation or alliance has been formed. It has not signaled that things will be done in good faith and that there can be cooperation between this sub-region and the larger West African sub-region, right? So if that is the case, then they will themselves will not be able to achieve their own mission of, you know, security, collective security, and, you know, collective economic growth.
ECOWAS leaders met Sunday in Abuja, Nigeria, for an annual summit. Isike noted that Nigerian President Bola Tinubu, who serves as ECOWAS chairman, has appointed a team to convince the breakaway states to reverse their action. Senegal's President Bassirou Faye heads the team.
The appointment of President Faye of Senegal to negotiate and bring the breakaway bloc back to the ECOWAS is a good move. He's been very optimistic about dialogue and reunification with this breakaway group. So hopefully he's able to leverage the soft power advantage that Senegal has in the Sahel to bring this to fruition.
Isike says it's unlikely that other ECOWAS members will join the new group.
However, I do not think that this will be the case, because these states in themselves, of course, they have over 72 million people, will not amount to much, do not have strong economies that can entice anyone to join them for any kind of advantage or privilege that they are not already getting from ECOWAS. And of course, we know that the bigger, the better. So I think the tendency will be for everyone to rally around the current team to pull them back into ECOWAS, for ECOWAS to remain and celebrate a 50th anniversary.
The Sahel states say they won't return to ECOWAS, but some analysts and ECOWAS officials think more dialogue and negotiations may persuade them to change their stand. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
President Joe Biden says he is staying in the race for re-election against former President Donald Trump after Biden struggled in their first debate. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at what U.S. voters think about the president's continuing candidacy.
The Biden campaign is pushing back against calls for their candidate to step aside following his debate struggles. With $50 million in paid media for July and an aggressive campaign schedule this week, Biden told a Wisconsin rally Friday that he's staying in the race. Voter Sabrina Jordan says he's still a viable candidate.
He should be consistent. He should be, I won't say defiant, but somewhere between consistent and defiant, he needs to let people know. And he did today that he ain't going nowhere. And unless something changes dramatically, he is the man for me.
Voter Jonathan Listag was not so sure.
The physiology that he displayed, he is not the same man. You can't turn back. We're not getting younger. You can't beat old age.
Seeing Biden back on the campaign trail after the debate does not ease the concerns of registered Democrat Ellis Johnston.
I don't feel confident in Joe Biden's ability to win this election, and that makes me very afraid.
For Trump supporters, Biden's sometimes halting debate performance reconfirmed their view that he's not fit for another term. California voter Lamont Pearson.
There's nothing that can come out of Joe Biden's mouth to make me think anything other than what he's already shown me, as well as Trump.
Biden's debate performance is not the whole picture, says Georgia voter Jeffrey Tannarelli.
I think Joe Biden is very passionate and very intelligent. I think he did not perform well because he did not meet the expectations. And his performance was what people expected of him.
That lack of energy leaves Washington, D.C. voter Hannah Sobolevich open to a new candidate.
It was kind of clear to me that maybe Biden's not as with it as he used to be. And I think I'd be supportive if someone... they put up another candidate rather than Biden.
If Democrats are to have a different nominee, they need to move quickly, says Michigan voter Alexis Zaidan.
There's a lot of conversations that need to happen within the next, you know, month around what could the Democratic Party do to bring all of its, you know, fractured vote, like its fractured base back to its core and hopefully build strong ahead of November, or we will be looking at a Trump presidency.
Biden's vice president and running mate Kamala Harris would be at the top of the list to replace him as the party's candidate. But that may not work, says California voter Stephanie Bowers.
Kamala would take over, which I would love. But I also think with the world being the way it is, all the prejudice going on, that Trump would probably beat Kamala more so than beating Biden.
Pushing ahead with Biden as the nominee, his campaign has First Lady Jill Biden meeting with military families in three states this week. And the president counter-programming next week's Republican Party convention with remarks in Texas and Nevada. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.